When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1660, Money and Divorce, the case for equal shared custody with Emma Johnson, author of The 50-50 Solution.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
It's hard to be the primary parent, and I was also the primary breadwinner, and I was resentful. And by this time, I'd started, you know, this public platform about single moms, my blog. And I was listening to all these other women and just sorting it out on an intuitive level. I'm like, I can't reconcile this norm, the social norm of kids staying primarily with women, with my feminism.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. We're shifting gears today and talking about money in the aftermath of divorce, particularly if there are children involved. My guest today is the creator of the Wealthy Single Mommy Community and the author of the new book, The 50-50 Solution, Emma Johnson. In the book, she showcases the robust research that proves that in most cases, equal time sharing with the kids is the best outcome for everyone in a family where the adults no longer live together. Emma talks about how equal parenting time leads to better physical, emotional, and mental health for children of divorce. It leads to higher career earnings for single mothers, fathers become more engaged and their rights as parents are preserved, less parental and legal conflict, and why this should be the custody framework of the future. Emma talks about how many moms resist the idea of shared parenting. They don't want to give up time with their kids. What are her thoughts on that? Here's Emma Johnson. Emma Johnson, welcome back to So Money. It's been a minute, and in that minute, plus maybe a pandemic we throw in, you've been busy writing a book, and we are excited for The 50-50 Solution, the book, which I have spoken to you on this topic in the past. I'm very interested in it. I think it's helpful. I think it's important. I was writing an article about this back in the day, and now happy to see that it's many, many more pages. The 50-50 Solution. You call this the surprisingly simple choice that makes moms, dads, and kids happier and healthier after a split. So a lot of times when we hear the term 50-50, as it pertains to any sort of division of labor, division of parenting in a relationship, you lose people. They're like, there's no such thing as 50-50. Tell us what you mean by this and why it's simple, yet you had to write a book to explain this to people.
But you kind of did it in an article. Thanks for your support, right? So, really what won me over on this topic was I always say I don't have an opinion on this. I'm just a messenger of the science, right? And so for many decades, social scientists have been looking at equal parenting versus sole custody situations, right? Where a parent lives almost entirely with one parent and maybe sees the other parent on weekends or something, right? So what's better than that? Or they were studying like 35%, a minimum of 35% with one parent and the rest with the other parent, because there simply weren't that many 50-50 families. They just wasn't happening, unlike today, where you probably know families that are doing it. It's more common. But so what they were finding across the board was that when you have at least that 35, 40% time, there's just so many better outcomes for the kids, right? Even when there's conflict between the parents, even when we're controlling for things like race and income and education of the parents, even when the parents don't choose it themselves. Because often people are like, oh, well, that's really nice if you just love your ex and you want to do 50-50 and it's amicable. Even if a judge is making you do it or it's the law in your state where it's a presumption, it is still, the kids still fare best. And more recently, there's enough data when we're finding there's Dr. Bill Fabricius at Arizona State University. He's really a leader in this space and has just decades of research. Now he's able to look and find that the closer that schedule gets to the 50-50 number, the better the outcomes are for the kids. So 50-50 is actually great. And the way he describes it, the biggest risk of separated family, divorced families is that the dad's going to check out. Right? Fatherlessness, it's a really real threat. And it's easy to understand when we relegate men to being part-time parents, right? They lose control. They lose meaningful time to bond and connect with their kids, to grow as parents themselves. So they do, they slip out and kids know that. But when everybody in the room and our communities and our society recognize that that relationship is 50-50 and that's a good, positive thing, it gives those children so much more confidence that their dads aren't going to leave. They don't live with constant anxiety that somebody's going to abandon them. So that really resonated with me. And so that plays to your question, which is, yeah, life is going to happen, right? Somebody's going to take the kids to visit the grandparents. One parent does scouts with the kids on Tuesdays and that. But the essence of, but even more so, somebody might be deployed or they're struggling with a mental health issue or they are caring for an aging parent, right? This thing, it creates the security in that family that the spirit of it is 50-50. So all of a sudden you have all this flexibility to allot for life. It's the spirit. Like people were just get bickering like, you had the kids for 5 extra hours because you took them on a trip. Well, guess what? My kids are teenagers. They go into their room for 20 hours at a time. I never see them. Like the 5 hours is not meaningful. It's the spirit of what the schedule is that's meaningful.
You talk about the biggest risk or one of the biggest fears of separated families is the father checking out. But there's also the big real risk of the mother who's, you know, in an arrangement where she's 100% or majority of the time with her kids is that she loses her time and she's less able to make a living, a suitable living, make more money. And so there is this economic fragility that we too often see with moms post-divorce. I feel like as a feminist, you got to get behind this.
You have to get behind it because I often say you cannot legislate equality inside of a marriage, right? I know that's a lot of the work that you do. Women, everyone's arguing who's picking up the kids, who's doing the laundry, right? You cannot, there is no legislation outside of that house that can change the labor divide inside that house. But there is legislation that we can apply to separated families. So we're talking about 23 million U.S. families with kids where the parents live separately, where we have the power to impose equality on that family, equality of time and equality of earning. And it is powerful and it benefits women. I did a small survey of my audience and we found that women who have equal time sharing earn more. And they're happier and healthier and they feel good about their schedules. And also, despite the naysayers, the majority of moms actually want 50-50 schedules, whether they had them or not. Yeah. And this was my small project, but we know.
Well, Emma, it was 2,300, if I recall, single moms.
Yeah, it was. I was really proud of that project. And but it's also substantiated by more scientific research. So Spain has shared parenting, equal parenting laws in some of their provinces, right? And which is really interesting because you can compare them to the other provinces that don't have equal parenting. And they found where equal parenting is the norm, the kids fared better, and then women were more likely to be employed post-divorce. And it's just common sense. It's more expensive to have two houses than one, right?
Culturally, though, we're so accustomed to this belief, this tradition of like mom knows best, mom is the best parent. And people are like, well, I don't care what the studies say. Like, I'm the better parent. And in a divorce, of course, there's this tension and this kind of like war of personalities. And so, as I reported on this, and I'm sure you have, there are a lot of moms who are like, in no world am I giving my husband, because maybe they don't like him. Obviously, they're getting divorced. They're not able to see him more as like a father figure, especially if it wasn't 50-50 in the marriage while they were married, right? They don't trust, I guess, that he's going to be able to step up.
Right. And just, I always think those, just even the statements that those moms make is telling. I'm not going to give him more time. He's 50% his kids are 50% his child. It's not yours to give. Those kids have a basic human right to be parented by both their parents. And parents have a basic human right to parent their children. We are not in the business of giving the state, because that's what you're talking about. I'm going to fight for it. You're getting the courts involved. The state has no business getting into our families and deciding who's a better parent. We don't take Native children and put them in boarding schools to re-educate them because that's better for them. That is not the state's job. We don't screen parents, whether they're good or better or best parents, when they take newborns home from the hospital. That is not the state's role. Children are not entitled to good parents. They are entitled to the parents that they have.
I thought it was interesting when we spoke a few years ago on the topic. I think you were the one who told me that old English law, the dad was always the one who got the kid in the divorce because kids were labor on the farm.
Or a line of inheritance, right?
Right, yeah. Right. You come to this with your own story to tell, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about that story. And
I'm literally in like the other screen of my computer bickering with him about stuff. I just beyond bickering, we're fighting. Like, it, you don't have to get along with your ex or your kid's parent, co-parent, to make this work, right? It's just 50. Right. So yeah, so we got divorced, the kids were newborns, and I was old school feminist. Like, I was of another generation where I was like, well, of course the kids are going to stay with me. They're nursing babies. And of course I'm like the better parent. They're going to stay with me. Like, this is a no-brainer. And I went along that path. And be careful what you wish for, ladies, because it's hard to be the primary parent. And I was also the primary breadwinner, and I was resentful. And by this time I'd started, this public platform about single moms, my blog. And I was listening to all these other women and just sorting it out on an intuitive level. I'm like, I can't reconcile this norm, the social norm of kids staying primarily with women, with my feminism. And then I made the mistake of digging into the social science, of which there is a lot, in a totally mushrooming world of social science around this topic. And then there's no way you can reconcile primary care with the social science, right? It's like, even when there's conflict, even when the parents don't choose it themselves, on and on, it's better for kids. And I was like, well, this is very interesting. And why don't more people do this? Why aren't more people aware of the science? And thankfully, younger parents are definitely doing this a lot more. They assume it. They don't even think about it. They're like, why are you even writing a book? It's so obvious. So I just feel very heartened. There's a whole movement that's really focused on the policy, getting parenting laws passed at a state level. So a rebuttable presumption. So that's a presumption that's equal parenting time. When there's always caveats for when there's abuse or different circumstances where a judge can deviate from that. But I really like put my work into focusing on the cultural change. You know, if we can just convince people one person at a time, we don't even need laws on the books. There's states in Northern or countries in Northern Europe where they're like, Denmark has a great equal parenting culture. Nobody uses family court and there's no laws on the book. It's just a social norm.
Mm. Put this in practical terms for us. Like, I'd love for you to like paint the scenario, because we say 50-50 equal parenting, equal shared parenting. But like, if you've got a busy job versus like you're an entrepreneur, like I want to know where the time is being created for the especially for the partner who wasn't as present during the marriage, maybe because they were traveling a lot for work and the other one was a stay-at-home parent caregiver. Practically, can you give us a sample, an example of how this played out?
So it's equal right. So often, so I hear from two camps, like women, single moms will often complain that their kid's dad doesn't show up and take equal responsibility. And I believe that. And the men in this space are often very vocal that they don't have equal rights to the kids, that the moms have more rights than they do, than the men do. And I also believe that. It has to be equal rights, equal responsibility, and equal time. So yeah, maybe you had the bigger career and were making the bucks, but guess what? Then you have to figure it out, right? Yeah. Maybe you hire a nanny, maybe you get your parents involved, or maybe you take a lesser career. Somebody has to do it. And if we're constantly defaulting to this idea of primary parent or trying to replicate what was in the marriage is over. That you might have had an agreement that he works and she stays home. Okay, big mistake, but whatever. Like that doesn't matter anymore because the relationship's over. It's time for a new contract, right? Like we can't, if that was so great, you'd still be married. It didn't work. It doesn't matter. It's a new contract. So people are going to have to make sacrifices.
Mm. I remember you talking too about like in your divorce settlement, like you talk about make it legislatable, writing into your, I think it was your divorce agreement that both parents are responsible for the kid's doctor's appointments and the parent who is doing it overtime gets like $20 an hour.
Another mom. Yeah. She was really smart in her divorce because she worked in the legal system and she knew what she was doing. And she did that. And she had like four kids and there was a few of them were special needs. So there was like heavy lifting on the medical front. And it was the same thing. She was resentful in the marriage because she was doing all the like logistical labor and emotional labor. And so she is like such a, she did us all a favor because I've told that story 100 times. She wrote it into her divorce agreement that everybody just does it. Like everybody basically gets paid $20 or whatever an hour to run the kids around. And at the end of the year, they tally it up and any discrepancy is paid out. And she said the first year he was super pissed. He was like, I'm not going to have to pay you to take care of the kids, but it changed his behavior. It's sort of like the fair play. You know, you just have to document it for people to see it. They don't know. And it's, I mean, I really, the essence of this book is like, I worked really hard to not blame one gender and to extend grace to everybody. We are all products of our cultures and our, and the patriarchy and our upbringing. And we all get it wrong. You know, we're really trying to torpedo all of that and start a new day. And everybody has to be better. Everybody has to be better, but we have to see it before we can change.
And to see the change, you say, think long-term, like don't just focus on the immediate results of the divorce. And because obviously everyone's really emotional, but to really have that long-term view, what are the things you would suggest, you know, kind of envisioning as you think ahead? And what are some of the like long-term benefits? We've kind of touched on some of like the financial security, you getting your time back, the kids are happier, everyone's happier, but like the mindset shift, what would you like people to sort of adjust their thinking long-term so that they can get behind this more?
Well, right. Well, first of all, a big part of this is father involvement, recognizing how critical father involvement is, understanding the social science that men biologically, hormonally connect and bond with babies given enough time, right? They need enough time to do that. When the kids are older, it is one therapist I interview in the book. She had a great term. It's gritty parenting, right? You really don't connect and bond with a kid unless you're like going through the hell of parenting, right? And that's not going to happen on every other weekend. You have got to be like fighting with that kid to get their shoes on, to get out the door and get in their bath and manage bedtime while you're also managing your career. Like it's the hard part of parenting that makes you a good parent. It helps you figure out your kids. They figure you out. You learn how to parent, right? You take responsibility, you grow as a dad. So we have to be really, and I believe very strongly that women have the power in the domestic sphere. We have some ways to go when it comes to sitting on corporate boards and filling legislative seats. But when it comes, but when those moms are like, well, I'm not going to give him time. You have all the power. You are controlling children, all the children.
Yeah.
Right. And what's important to us? Most of us would say family, love, our children, relationships. Women have power over all of those things. We have got to be recognizing our power and wielding it with love and care and responsibility. And that means not just holding men accountable. Yes, that too, but also granting them grace and supporting them as they grow in their parenting journey. We call on men to support and be allies of women in the workplace. We need to be doing that for men in their parenthood.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
Now, inevitably, I'm going to get some angry emails, as I'm sure you do, right? Well, my husband's a deadbeat. He's an alcoholic. He's not capable. That's why I'm getting a divorce. You know, I don't want to be with him, but I don't think he should be around our kids either. Obviously, we're not talking about these extreme relationships, right?
No, there's always going to be caveats for extreme abuse. However, somebody has a drinking problem. That doesn't mean they lose custody of their kids. Many people have addiction issues, right? And there's not a judge in this country that is going to bar a kid from seeing their parent because they're struggling with addiction, because then we're talking like 30% of the population. So, right? So if we have a spirit of recognizing that that dad is important to the kids' lives, it creates space for him to heal, to be safe, right? To be then the involved parent. And vice versa, because guess what? Moms have addiction problems too.
Right, right, right. The assumptions that we make are, right. I mean, they're so deeply ingrained. In terms of where we are right now, legally, and this is divorce is a state by state situation. The laws governing divorce are state issued, state mandated. What is Are we seeing a movement towards making 50-50 parenting the default? And so there doesn't need to be like the legal costs associated with changing that, hiring lawyers.
Well, that's the thing. So in the last few years, we now have 6 states in the United States that have a rebuttable presumption of equal parenting time. So that just means that wherever you live, it's assumed that the parenting time is going to be split 50-50. And judges and families can deviate that. No one's going to hold you to that unless you go to court, right? So that is a huge, so that is, I see that as a snowball. And I really think, yes, states need to get on board and start passing those laws because nobody wants to be a relic. I mean, if there's, and as more laws are passed and more people do this, we've got more and more data. So for example, in Kentucky, which is one of the first states where equal parenting laws were passed, we now have a really beautiful line chart that shows since the law was passed, the line of, so if you go into court data, the number of family court filings where there's also a domestic violence case attached, so like, you know, both, you click both, the tick both the boxes when you're running the data report. So that line had already been decreasing, and it decreased even faster after the law was passed, right? Yeah. We look and we talk about child abuse cases. Ohio does not have a shared parenting bill. However, there are a number of counties where it is the cultural norm, the judicial norm. So most courts, most people are going to just do 50-50. And we have great data that shows that in the counties where 50-50 is the norm, there's lower rates of child abuse, right? Physical, sexual, emotional child abuse in those counties, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, it's people just have, individuals need to get on board, governing bodies need to get on board, and it is happening. I often say, if you're in court right now with your co-parent, barring any really, really extreme case, your kids are going to look back and judge you. They are going to grow up. No one's going to be in nuclear families anymore. They're going to grow up and do 50-50, and they're going to look back. It's like our grandmother smoking and drinking while they're pregnant. Like, it's like, what the hell are you thinking? It's ridiculous.
What are some other interesting trends you're seeing in divorce? So this is a trend, hopefully, that's going to continue. But I'm also seeing, for example, couples not selling the house. And I don't know what there's a name for it, where they go
nesting
because they want the kids to have that stable one home. I kind of like that. What are some other arrangements or smart adaptations that you're seeing couples make in divorce?
Yeah. So nesting is like, I don't know any way that does it long-term because moving is hard and parents don't want to do it. And it's, then you're so enmeshed.
No one's giving up the 3% mortgage. I think that's what.
That is a real thing. Yeah. No, but it's like, cause then you're like, basically you're still fighting over the dishes and who's changing the sheets. Like it's too much. No one ever does it. And really, if we want to get into the social science, I see so many parallels with that idea that kids need one primary home. Right. And that goes into this whole chapter I have in the book about how we've really come to misunderstand attachment parenting. Like we're stuck from the 1950s and this idea that kids need one home and there's one parent that they can bond with. Of course, it's going to be the mom and that thinking, and that everybody else is disposable. Right. So we really have to get away from that. Kids are very adaptable. And they can and do connect and bond with not only moms and dads, but grandparents and teachers and coaches. And the love potential is infinite. It is infinite. Mm. But what was the other point that we were?
Well, just sort of like the ways that couples are, you know, finding a new modern way of divorcing. I mean, I know there was conscious uncoupling, right?
Yeah. And that's cool and everything. But I mean, it's the same thing. It's really part of what I'm talking about, right? It's like being thoughtful. It's not about winning. It's about, you know, I mean, I always like, I'm just messenger about like what the social science says, right? It's like a new way of being. It's like the relationship didn't work anymore. You're moving apart. Though now there's like a whole nother body of research, like putting up in our grills saying like marriage is great. You know, married people are happier than single people. People with kids are happier than people without kids. And then that's just the individuals. Like, let's talk about the fabric of society. We need children, right? We have lousy social networks in this country and people don't want to have babies. Those are all big problems, right? So there is like, you know, there's like the extreme, which is the traditional wife movement, right? But at the other time, like people have actually been married and had kids, and society has perpetuated itself despite unlikeliness of that. So I don't really know. I'm asking a lot of questions in that space myself.
Yeah. You have opinions about child support and how it's important to sort of work your way away from child support. If you're dependent on it, that it's important to find a way out. And this is kind of a tough maneuver for single moms, especially who might be dependent on that, especially if they were not working while they were married and now they need that. And like getting a job after like 10 years of not working is like really, really difficult. So can you talk through some of the practicalities of that? First of all, why you think that's important? And second, how to actually do that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any role for child support or alimony anymore. The employment playing field is men and women can and do work. And the pay gap is now really women choosing to off ramp for caregiving, right? So that's an important and I know loaded conversation. But when it comes to separated families, one of the most heartening things I'll say, so when you have money exchanged, first of all, depending on where you live, it probably is going to influence your thoughts and decisions around custody. And again, this is what's best for kids is when their parents share parenting time equally. But if there's money on the table, somebody's going to be fighting for more time because it's going to mean more money or less money, right? We have got to get that out of the equation. And the reality is for the vast majority of families, except for very wealthy people, or if somebody's not working, but judges are, don't put up with people not working anymore. Everybody needs to work and earn. So otherwise, the sums for child support are modest. The child support system has never worked. It's something like 40% of child support owed has actually been paid. And one of the most interesting and heartening things I found in my research in writing this book was that these huge numbers of people, I'll just use gender terms because it is very along gender lines. So like huge portions of moms who could qualify for child support choose not to go after it. And the reasons they gave were, he has the kids at his house, so why should he have to pay? Or he's already paying what he can. I don't want the state in my business, right? And these are tend to be lower income families who are doing it. They're co-parenting. Everybody already has to have a house. What's the child support for, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if it's 50-50, even if it's 60-40 or 20-80, everybody has to pay rent. Everybody has to feed the kid when they're at the house. You know how it is. You're invariably going to have to buy a pair of sneakers. The kids need sneakers all the time, right? So, and we're not talking about the extras, right? If there's camp or there's childcare or health insurance, those are not child support. Those are just out-of-pocket expenses that do need to be shared. But we're just talking about support to pay for the basics of the kid that doesn't have any role anymore. It just holds everybody back and hurts the kids.
Do you think that the child support has inadvertently made it so, or the presence of child support, the accessibility of that has made it so it sort of discourages 50-50 parenting, right? Because like usually in the dad's mind, it's like, well, I'm paying, so I don't have to be present. That's my contribution.
Right. And the moms are like, well, again, everybody's incentivized to fudge it, right? Like to under-earn, to hide money. And then they're just going to fight about it. So if somebody's paying somebody else and he shows up and she's got her nails done and a new car, like how, like it just don't do it, ladies. Just get your own job, get your own money. It feels awesome.
But what if one person makes a large amount of money and the other person makes minimum wage? I mean, I get everyone can get a job, but not everybody can get the same paying job. So
why is it one person's job? There's no research that I'm aware of that shows that equalizing those households makes them better co-parents. And baked into that question, which I get all along, and I know it's rhetorical or hypothetical, baked into it is to say that wealthier parents are better parents than poorer parents.
No, I don't think it's about who's a better parent, but it's like, if I make $1 million a year and my ex makes $50,000 a year, okay, that's an extreme, but we're sharing these kids and we want them to have, I want to go to Disney. Okay, I'm going to pay, like we're going to 50-50 that expense.
No, that would be an extra expense, right?
Okay.
Like, if somebody wants to take their kids to Disney, then you do that. That's a gift to your children. Like, I'm not going to subsidize your gift to your kids, right? And then the out-of-pocket, like divorce always has, there's like the child support and then there's the extras, right? Those are the out-of-pocket things. There's child support, there's child care, insurance, soccer, whatever, like all those things. I really want to just talk about the child support part of it. And we can talk about the other part too. But I mean, the child support, like somebody's living in a 5-bedroom house and somebody's living in a 2-bedroom apartment. people raise their kids in two-bedroom apartments all over this world. It's really passing judgment on the apartment parents that they somehow need help to be a better parent to the five-bedroom, right? There's no logic in that. I don't know of any science that supports that. And it really just becomes about bickering of two divorced people.
I can see that. I can see that. What are some of the other things that people say as pushback to this thesis? I'm just curious because it is such a slow moving movement.
It is. It's accelerating and I'm heartened and hopeful. Well, the biggest when bills are put up, the biggest, loudest voices in opposition when laws are trying to be passed is bar associations. Lawyers don't like it, right?
Because they're right.
You're not going to fight. There goes their livelihoods. And then the other loud voices are domestic violence advocates. And their argument is like, this is going to put women and children at risk. But the science does not support that. And I laid out how it actually has been shown to minimize conflict and minimize violence and just violence overall is plummeting. Thankfully, you know, it's been a very wonderful couple of decades in terms of, and a lot of us, because women have their own money, right? We've taught men not to be violent. We're not doing such a good job teaching women not to be violent. The rates of violence between men and women are actually very surprisingly equal. Most people are surprised by that. But it is not a risk. And in fact, like this is an old stat, but I think it's very, I connect with it, that it is true that the intimate partner violence is at its highest right around the time of a breakup. And when the researcher worked on that, he's like, just think about it. You know, if somebody's worried their kids are going to be taken from them, which is a very real risk for men, right? And their lives are upset. That's when this violence is going to spike. But if everybody's confident because everyone in their community is like, okay, you break up and it sucks and it's painful, but we all have relationships with the kids, it diffuses the potential for violence.
Well, I want everyone to read this book, even if you're married, because we all have maybe a friend in our lives or a relative who is unhappy in their marriage or is going through a divorce. And I think your book can give them some hope, because I see a lot too online where women, especially, they don't want to get divorced because they're worried about not seeing their kids enough, women too. I mean, for mom is like not all the time, but I think it's important to look at the data, like, and also to remind women that when it becomes more equal, your life can actually open up and your kids' lives. If you're focused on your kids' happiness, this is the solution. But bonus, you get to go out there too and have a better life financially, personally. I mean, when are you supposed to date?
Trust me, I did it. I used to have
your kids are home all the time.
You can, like, I was like a dating machine. Like, I had one night a week, my kids were with their dad. I was like, I'm going out. Like, I had those OkCupid dates lined up.
Oh my gosh. You are efficient, Emma. Emma Johnson, thank you so much. The book is called The 50-50 Solution, the surprisingly simple choice that makes moms, dads, and kids happier and healthier after a split. I appreciate you. Congratulations. I already ordered the book, even though I got a free copy, but I believe in supporting authors, especially my friends. Thank you.
Thanks so much. You're the best. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much to Emma Johnson for joining us. The book again is called The 50-50 Solution, the surprisingly simple choice that makes moms, dads, and kids happier and healthier after a split. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you back here on Wednesday. I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.